My name is David Halpin, a retired trauma and orthopedic surgeon in my 86th year. I've had taken an interest in COVID since the first announcement from Wuhan on the 12th of December 2019. On my website, which is dhalpin.infoaction.org.uk, you will find 49 references to COVID if you look in the search box.
So could you give us your summation of the various aspects of COVID? The most recent announcements, David, are to do with whether lockdowns were necessary, the timing of them. And so I wonder if you could say what you make of all the measures that were taking place and the action of a certain Mr. Boris.
Right. What is obvious to me, Tony, is that there was, as they say, there are conspiracy theories, but there are also conspiracies. And a key matter is this: the title of the bill, and I noted this, but no one else picked it up. The title of the original title of the bill was the 2019/2020 coronavirus bill. Now that was in the works before Christmas of 2019. Wuhan, the announcement came from Wuhan about this pandemic, inverted commas, on the 12th of December 2019. The bill was, I think, 340 pages. It was very complex. It should have gone through committee stages with MPs, a committee of the MPs, and I think the Lords too. I'm not sure whether it did that or not, but the bill was titled that way. Later, in February, and it may have been in response to my publicity about it, it was changed to 220/221 coronavirus bill. The fact is that it was drawn up in the later part, at the latest of 2019. So in other words, it was planned. It was a conspiracy. No question.
All right. So what about the actual measures, though, David? The idea of having a lockdown and the timing of the lockdowns is said to have been a little bit too late, and as a result, tens of thousands of people died.
No. Well, first of all, many of the people died. I managed the local home affairs correspondent, Mr. Ben Woolvin. He did actually, I give him credit for that, he used to say people died with COVID, not of COVID. But as you know, there was a great welter of propaganda. They showed lorries being filled with body bags in New York. They showed Catholic priests in northern Italy sprinkling holy water on lines of coffins. This was the background, the propaganda, which was putting the fear of God into people. In this country, it was Mr. Neil Ferguson, who, as you know, had a dirty hand in the foot and mouth exercise. And Ferguson spoke, I'm sure I'm right in quoting this, Ferguson spoke of up to 500,000 dying of COVID in the UK. This is the same man who, during the lockdown, called for, I think in March, by Johnson's government, he in fact visited a paramour in central London, leaving his house in South London with his two teenage children, because the marriage was an open marriage, and he was going into central London during the lockdown against the rules imposed by Mr. Johnson to meet with his lover there. This is the caliber of the people running our country, Tony. They are liars, they are psychopaths. This whole exercise, and I was reluctant to see it at first, is about culling the global population.
But look, you have to separate people in order for a weaponized infectious disease to be beaten. I mean, to stop it spreading, this lockdown was necessary.
Hang on. This is the only time, I think, in our history, if we've quarantined the healthy. for about 4 months. We live here on the edge of Dartmoor. It's a popular place for families to bring their children for a walk with their dog or whatever from the boxes they call houses in Newton Abbot. For about 4 months, there was no sound of a child on the moor. So they missed hearing the cuckoo. They never smelt the lovely scent of gorse. They were locked up in their boxes without any schooling, with the damn television on in the corner, pumping out the propaganda and the rest of the rubbish that the BBC and the other broadcasters put out.
But hang on, it's no good to have people who aren't susceptible to COVID, you know, healthy young people, for example, going around, because they could be spreading it to older people, people who are more vulnerable.
That has been disproved. The transmissibility, there was some, I think it's called transmissibility or infectiousness. I think transmissibility is the formal term. There was transmissibility, and unlike some people commenting on COVID, there was a virus that had been manipulated in Wuhan, and as you know, with two vast tranches of dollars from the CDC in America. And it was certainly engineered, and I believe that they were working on that virus, that adapted coronavirus, first identified as a family of viruses in the 1960s. They're working on that, I think, for about 2015. And I'm quite sure that they worked on, that they were used studying primates, studying their behavior, because you probably now know, in fact, that Professor Sukrit Bhakti and others have spoken of the cerebral effects of the vaccination. There's no question about it that people have had their consciousness dulled in some cases. And it's quite obvious to lay observers of intelligence, they can see it in people they're looking after.
Look, this is moving a step beyond talking about the vaccination. I'm just talking really here about COVID-19 itself. I just wonder why you think it's not okay to make sure that people are not mingling in such a situation where actually people are dying because of actually quite a deadly disease, which has been, it seems like a fairly common cold type thing, not a flu even. Coronavirus is actually part of the common cold family, has been weaponized. Well, obviously, the thing to do is to keep people separate.
That's incorrect. About apparently, I cannot give you chapter and verse on this, but I recall it being said that about 15% of people with the common cold, so-called coryza, they isolate coronavirus in those 15%. But there are other viruses that cause the common cold. The fact is that some people did die who had premorbidity. They had other things like diabetes or gross obesity or chest disease. That was a big factor. People who had chronic chest disease, say from smoking or industrial dust exposure, they were more liable to be very ill. There was also another effect. The toxins of the virus had a particularly injurious effect on the tissues of the kidney and the liver. That was another factor. And there were also other factors as well, like the cytokine storm that people talked about. They were giving big doses of steroids to some of these people in the hospitals.
Now, some people have said, David, that if the government had straight away allowed the treatment by drugs like ivermectin, antiviral drugs, and hydroxychloroquine, I think, anti-parasitic drugs, which do a lot to stop viruses, that we may not have had any problems at all. But these, as I understand it, were actually withdrawn from the market at the end of 2019, even before COVID happened. So what do you make of this talk about drugs like ivermectin? Tess Laurie has made a lot of, Dr. Tess Laurie from Bath here actually, has made a lot of fuss about, you know, this drug should have been used, this would have saved literally millions of lives, and it wasn't used. So what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I have reservations about Dr. Tess Laurie. Let's leave it at that. There is no question that good studies have shown a beneficial effect of ivermectin and a remarkable, very simple compound, very wide effects on nematodes, on flatworms, and on other parasites, hydroxychloroquine. But as you know, there was a systematic censorship of those two apparently beneficial drugs, simple drugs too. There was a state in India, I can't remember which in fact made sure that many of their citizens got I'm not sure whether it's ivermectin or hydrochloroquine, but the death rate in that particular state was much reduced from compared with neighbouring states.
Yeah, Uttar Pradesh, I think it was Uttar Pradesh, actually.
I think.
And there's also some strange occurrences, like, for example, in Haiti, apparently nobody died of COVID. So it's almost as if this was something which had a bigger effect in the more developed world, countries like Britain and the United States.
Well, there's so much to this, Tony. I can think of the, as you know, the PCR test, which was used to prove the presence of COVID, that was used. It was vastly... It went well past the 40 cycles that Gary Mullis specified, and it's central to remember that he said this was not a diagnostic tool. All it showed you was remnants of viruses, and the PCR test was used. And later, even the WHO did actually broadcast the fact that it should be disregarded as a test. And then a lateral flow test came in.
Jacinda Ardern from New Zealand, I remember who they had a very, very tough ban on anyone entering the country. She said, "Tist, tist, tist."
Well, the reaction in New Zealand was ultra-fascist, quite extraordinary. Of course, you saw some that of it yourself. You had some personal experience.
Well, they're just being cautious, surely.
No. The whole thing was... The whole thing was well planned. There's all sorts of things that I could add to our discussion.
Well, one thing I'd like to ask you about specifically is Boris's party, because there were certainly students here in Bristol who decided to have COVID parties so they could all catch COVID. And some were calling them reckless. Others, a few medical professionals, said actually this is quite a sensible idea. So what's your view on that?
Making sure you've got the disease, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is that generally speaking, our immune systems have been existing for millennia, and they're remarkably sophisticated. They, as you know, they're humoral factors, gamma globulins is a cellular factor based on the thymus, and we can get on to how the COVID vaccination actually depresses immune responses, and why people who get COVID now, the mutants that have happened, they usually have been vaccinated, so that the people who've been vaccinated are more liable to get it because their immune systems depressed. I'm digressing, but the fact is that we have wonderful immune systems unless we inherit some deficiency in that, and that can happen rarely, or if we are malnourished, as the poor folk in Gaza are, they're more liable to get disease. But generally speaking, we can ward off almost everything, including the things which frighten people most, like smallpox. We exaggerate the mortality of these viral diseases. Some are Ebola. I don't know enough about that. But you know, that was the real... you can recall Mr. Blair's action in Sierra Leone. He was meant to be the saviour of those people there. So we have to... go back to the fact that we've got this far. Now, having said all that, I've got GP colleagues who were promoting vaccines. I don't mean ones in practice, I mean people who are retired, and they were afraid of a pandemic. One in particular said, have you seen the hemorrhagic disease in rabbits? These things can happen in humans. So there was that background, but I can speak, having been well educated at St. Mary's, where penicillin was found, where there was excellent teaching in immunology, for instance, who later got Nobel Prize, Ken Porter. We learnt about how we responded to challenges by bacteria, by fungi, and by viruses. And there's no question the whole thing was conjured up, and it was essentially about two things. It was certainly about reducing the global population towards the magic figure of 500 million, which Mr. Gates, I think, has been quoted as saying, and also to overwhelm our health service. It has been overwhelmed. Go to casualty departments now and see the people waiting in resignation, desperate, some with mental disease, some physical, some with lacerations. It is a crisis, and it's happened partly because of the whole COVID lie.
Okay, so do you want to say something about the vaccines now? You mentioned them a little bit, but I tend to call them the jabs myself.
Well, I call it the jab. I know a lot about vaccines. It's important to know that in 1972 or 76, there was a swine flu outbreak in a recruitment camp in America. About 400 suffered from it. Well, I think one recruit died. And they, the big pharmacy crowd, decided to roll out a vaccine. They took 6 months to produce it using fertile hen's eggs. And it was rolled out to about, I think, something like 40 million people in North America, in the USA. What resulted? There were over 210 cases of Guillain-Barré syndrome. That's when you get paralysis of muscles and of sensation, absent sensation, that may come, spreads out from the legs. If it goes high above, say, T3, above high thoracic segments, you lose your muscles of respiration, and people then have to be ventilated. And some of those die after ventilation or on ventilation. So that was a very large, it was quite the effects of that, and you can guarantee it was underreported. Some of the poorer people would have died or been very ill with Guillain-Barré syndrome, but that would not have got onto their figures. Now, during the COVID vaccination here, AstraZeneca conceived in a light bulb moment by Pollard, Professor Pollard, AstraZeneca's stroke Oxford vaccine. If you search on my website, I've given you the address of dhalpin.infoaction.org.uk. Put in Fiona, that's our daughter's name, and Pollard. There's a letter to the GMC about Professor Pollard, who conceived the way of producing a vaccine against the spike protein in a taxi, I think, with Neil Ferguson. It was a light bulb moment. And the Oxford Vaccine Group made some money out of it. Some of my postings are addressing Professor Pollard. And more recently, after my letter to the GMC about our daughter who died of a turbo cancer of the rectum, she had symptoms in April in 2023. Within 4 months, she was obstructed. And the inside of her abdomen, the peritoneal surfaces, were plastered with secondary tumor. She died over a year ago now, having borne an illness with great bravery. She never complained. Colostomy, chemotherapy times two, radiotherapy. She died of a turbo cancer. This is reported widely. A year ago, or just over a year ago, our son, who's a very fit fellow, phoned me up and said, "I've got bubbles, Dad, when I breathe deeply." It wasn't bubbles, it was a pleural rub from a pulmonary embolus. He had a pain in his calf as well. It was anticoagulant. He had a pulmonary embolus from the clots caused by a spike protein. He had one injection of the jab, one jab, so he could go abroad skiing. That was one requirement, as you know. People had to do that, have a jab before they flew abroad. Had to have a jab before they saw their old father in a care home and the rest of it. So in our family, the six immediate family, three of them have suffered injury because Sue's had one jab and she now has unstable gait and other symptoms which I relate to the COVID jab. It was, as I said from the word go, a toxic junk. And it was a plan. All the Royal Colleges were on board. The only one that fell out of line was the Royal College of Ophthalmologists, and they were seeing people who were blinded by optic vein thrombosis or optic artery thrombosis, and they could see that this was related in time. There's a temporal relationship with the jabbing.
Yes, I can remember when in 2021, when the jabs first arrived, there was actually a brief blip news story, I think it was about February, March, saying that, oh dear, AstraZeneca have discovered that they think their jab causes blood clots. And then there was really not much more heard of it.
First of all, Denmark, I think, withdrew the jab, and then several other European countries. There was, in particular, Tony, there was a most unusual pathology. I have to say that I was good on pathology as a student, and I've always kept, this is one reason why I am a good authority on Kelly, because pathology matters.
This is about causes of illnesses, isn't it? And so obviously if you don't know the cause, you can't address the problem. You're only fiddling with the symptoms.
Well, I used to teach that if you were a good pathologist, and surgeon should be, any doctor should be, but doctors are not good on pathology, but if you have a good knowledge of pathology and a good, if you think about how disease progresses, when you look at a patient who comes to you who's ill, you're looking at them with x-ray eyes. Pathology gives you x-ray eyes. Now, I could see from the word go that this jab was particularly good at causing thrombosis, and they were describing clotting in the sagittal sinus. There's a venous channel that runs from front to back, just underneath the dura. The sagittal sinus is quite a slow, it's the blood returning from the brain. You probably know that when you're thinking hard, the brain is very, very energetic, actually. But this sinus was clotting, and people were dying of cerebral thrombosis. And I did not ever know about thrombosis in the sagittal sinus before. They withdrew it in several of the European countries, and I think in May of 2021, I think they withdrew it here. Now, I corresponded with Professor Pollard because they were going to try the jab on 7 cohorts of children from age 5 up to the age of 17 in about 6 district general hospitals. The alacrity with which colleagues in these hospitals were happy to agree these trials was extraordinary. I wrote to the chief constable of Oxfordshire, where the Oxford vaccine laboratory is situated in Oxford, and I wrote to the thing saying that they were involved in a potential criminal assault on children. The trial on these children was stopped.
I don't know
how far in.
Interesting.
There may have been side effects, I don't know. But I felt so strongly that I should warn the chief copper of Oxfordshire. Now, if you look at Fiona Pollard on my website, the letter to the GMC, they said they were investigating him, but I had no further information about the investigation by a man.
Okay, well, look, we've just had this announcement from the COVID inquiry.
Right.
Can you say in your own words, David, what you think they did right, what they did wrong, and how you would have done things?
Nothing was right, Tony. Nothing was right. There was the whole thing was the most evil propaganda exercise. The lectern with the cross-hatching around it, with Johnson, a known liar and philanderer, telling us what to do. It was quite extraordinary. Professor Whitty, another extraordinary individual, based at Imperial, I think, one of 6 sons of a man who was a military attaché in Athens, who was blown up in a car during the rule of the colonels, along with, I think, 2 secretaries from the embassy. He's a military attaché. You know very well that military attachés are quite often MI6. And each of his sons went to Malvern College. probably about £30,000 a year now, or more. So Whitty, who's a bachelor, grew up in a household, I imagine, this is just supposition. I don't think Whitty had what I would call a warm and entirely logical household. That's the fact of it. And then think of Valance, Sir, what's the name, Valance, who had 600,000 shares in Smith Klein French when he was appointed the chief scientific advisor to our vile, vile governments. He divested himself of those shares, but later on they were put into trust or something. I can't remember now, but there was some little side shuffle. We are dealing with liars, and they've killed globally millions.
So what would you have done? So when the emergency bell starts ringing, 1st of February, I think it was, 2020, we've got actually quite a nasty virus. Would you have closed airports, that sort of thing? What would you have done?
I wouldn't have dismantled the health officer system. We had public health officers. They were a mixed bag. Some of them were jolly good, some were not. But their job was to look after each population. Good example is Gada Kami, who speaks out for Palestine. She qualified the same year as me in 1964, and she was the public medical officer for Bristol. So these people were on the ground. They had laboratories at their service. They were fully trained. What we were dealing with, actually, during the whole COVID thing was people who were not expert. They had no scientific training, or very little of it. I'm not saying I'm witty, but Valance, I'd question his scientific training. And if you look at, they've chosen Hallett, whose inquiry, the grounds for it were agreed by Boris Johnson, of all people.
Well, it's interesting mentioning Lady Justice Hallett, because
scientific training. She's not even got a university degree.
Well, no, but she does know the law, and that's her job. So you can I'd like to say about her her overseeing the inquest into the 7/7 London bombings, which was actually begun 8 years after the 7/7 London bombings and took 3 years to actually complete. Now, I would say she should never have done that job, because any judge or legal officer worth their salt would never have conducted inquests into the deaths of 55 or so people. You would have a public inquiry. An inquest is into the death of one or two people, possibly two, but not 55. It's a public inquiry is the correct procedure.
Unless you add the Section 17A, which I did for Kelly, as you know. 17A allows an inquest to gather to deal with mass death, as in the Marchioness drownings, and in one of the train crashes, I think Southwell, I think it was. So they don't even use that actually for that. You're quite right, though.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a large incident of lots of people dying, you have to have a public inquiry. But she decided no. And the other thing, of course, is she decided that she was going to have no jury. Those people I've spoken to, who are friends and of people who died in the 7/7 attacks, family who lost loved ones, etc., were told by Hallett that they couldn't speak and they couldn't ask questions about the failings of the intelligence services, for example.
Jenny, what you've done is to tell me what I do know, but I didn't know this, you see. What they've done is to, in fact, make sure all that was buried. So the irregularities, to put it mildly, of Hallett's inquiry as a coroner, which I don't think she'd ever been before, into the 7/7 bombings, was buried by our complicit media.
Anyway, finally, David, can you just give us an idea of what people can take home from COVID? In other words, if there is another spread of a virus such as this or other infectious disease, what should we do?
First of all, I boost my immunity with a simple thing, with vitamin D and zinc. They both help our immunity. That's one thing. The second thing our common sense and to be sceptical. Two things, I say this, that of all the qualities doctors need, which include a warm heart, i.e. empathy with fellow human beings, there are two qualities which I consider key. One is scepticism, and the other one is humility. That's not often seen, I'm afraid, in my profession, the latter. But scepticism is vital. So everything we see and do, we should question whether there's benefit, whether there's adverse effects. And as for vaccines, there's every reason to be sceptical. They are the big earners for big pharmacy. You've seen the share price rises of Pfizer with their jabs, and it also happened with AstraZeneca too, actually, until they stopped that. But they're still producing other vaccines. I looked today at what they call the hexavalent vaccine given to infants before the age of 6 months. This is against whooping cough, against hepatitis B, I think it is, against polio, and two other things. So an infant is being challenged with five antigens altogether. They're quite complex. They're being engineered in laboratories. They're having sometimes sugars added to them to make them more antigenic. We have to question whether they're necessary. Because although there may be mortality, say for the meningococcus, terrible meningococcal septicemia is a remarkably rapid death for a child that contracts it. But we have to bear that in mind. But we have to be sceptical. We have to question the whole edifice of modern pharmacy. It's based on profit, P-R-O-F-I-T. And the majority of medical papers are flawed. A majority. That included the one in The Lancet, where they reported the trial of hydroxychloroquine. They apparently used subtoxic levels of hydroxychloroquine, and later they were forced to retract the paper. It was put in to sabotage the use of hydroxychloroquine against the COVID, against the C-19. So we have to question everything around us, particularly now, as fascism dominates our governments in the West, in fact worldwide, including our friends in Russia. Fascism on the ascendancy, but it's not going to win. We have to use our common sense and our love for each other and not have a mechanistic approach.
What you're hinting at here, David, is that we need to really take responsibility for our own health rather than outsourcing
it. Exactly, Tony. Exactly.
Outsourcing it.
I go to Newton on Saturday, about a third are obese. Now the obesity rate in children is 17%. We are a sickly country. We've been made sick by sick governments and by sick media.
So the trouble is that we can't really necessarily trust doctors who have been indoctrinated by the pharmaceutical industry, and we can't really trust the television either, or the radio, or our newspapers to tell us, give us advice.
But what I do, I talk to many people, Bow Valley farmers, all these people know me. They know that I attempt to speak the truth. They light up because they often feel powerless. They're not fluent enough or not knowledgeable enough to speak about these things. But we often, there are two things. People can see that relatives and friends have been directly affected adversely by the vaccine. Some have died. In this parish alone, I could quote deaths and the most terrible injuries within half a mile of here. That's one thing. So I say to people, keep your common sense and don't lose your nerve. And I find that most people who work with their hands, they've got brains as well, mechanics and builders, most of them know what's going on, and we're winning. They know that they should never trust central authority.
David Halpin, thanks very much for joining us.
Okay, Tony, many thanks.